shores of El Pacifico. Bill Hendry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour. Well, just a strange week, man. Strange everything. And it just so happens on this particular week, I've decided to begin my own version of a diet. See, in other words, I'm not doing Jenny Craig, and I'm not doing Larry Craig, and I'm not doing...
But the other guys are doing Larry Craig, though.
True. There's a bunch of other guys that are doing Larry...
Will you shut up?
That's pretty funny. Yeah, funny. But I'm not doing any of that stuff, and I've just, after so many attempts, I've come up with my own, which is basically this. I'm limiting it to 2,000 calories a day. That's it, baby. And if I have to drop it down more, I will. And then commencing this weekend, we begin with the aerobic thing, like, you know, doing actual exercising.
You going to go out and do that polar bear club?
Polar bear club? What are you, nuts or something?
Ain't no polar bear club here. It ain't that cold?
Oh, no, man. Going out into this water here, this is California. I'll tell you, it's cold enough. It's cold enough. This is what, March? You go out into that Pacific Ocean, you'll freeze it. It'll be like two ice cubes down there. Don't even worry about it. So, no, No, the polar bear club. You talking about swimming?
Yeah, get out and do body surfing or something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're right, man. I mean, right out there, not, you know, two blocks away is the El Pacifico, man. I could jump into that sucker and go out and body surf every day and freeze myself to death, but I'd be a one hell of a good-looking body washed up on the shore. So anyway, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com. Make sure that you head over there, get a backstage pass, and get involved in all of the things that we've got going on over there for you. For the price of a backstage pass, you get thousands of hours of audio. You get thousands of hours of audio to download. And you also get, of course, our daily video cast. There's a five-day video cast archive. Our Saturday night shows that we did for a solid year locally here in Los Angeles. If you did not hear those or you didn't have an opportunity to see the video cast, you can see them now. All of those Saturday night shows are archived, including the video cast. So it's there at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. This is the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. It's this Etch-a-Sketch thing.
What's that?
Do you guys know what an Etch-a-Sketch is?
Yeah, man, my niece has got one. No, kid, I know got one.
They still do Etch-a-Sketches. What are you talking about, bud?
That's an old-time toy.
They still got them, though. But this is the dumbest thing, and it's the desperation of this guy. I hate to sound like I'm beating up on Santorum, but every time he opens his yap, he does something or says something. Here's the thing that I think is very funny. Liberals are all over this guy. And they're all over him like they were all over Palin, you know? They were all over Palin, man, like cold on ice, you know?
Yeah, like, they're all over Palin, man, like they wanted to do it with her. What?
Just never mind. So, and when they did, you know, when they were bagging on Palin, oh my God, they were all over Palin. Like, these guys thought there was a real threat. Half of these cats that I talk to that I know who are like stone liberals, they're frightened of the wrong stuff. I mean, yeah, Santorum is a disaster, but this guy's not going to be president. He was never going to be president. The same way that Palin was never going to be president. That used to make me laugh until I was sick when I heard people talking about Palin this, Palin that, Palin something else. Oh, my God, Palin. She was never going to be president of anything, man. She wasn't even going to be president of her own neighborhood watch. Sarah Palin was a interesting person. She's a person that people like to listen to. She's got, if you're a conservative, opinions that you probably want to hear. She has great observations as a mother, as a former governor, all of those things. I'm sure she writes a hell of a great book. She's an interesting interview subject. There are things about her that I admire. I wouldn't vote for her, but that's, you know, no big aspersion on her character. But she was never, ever, ever going to be president of the United States. She had a very loyal, rabid, and enthusiastic base of followers. The same with Rick Santorum. The same with Newt Gingrich. When you are running for president, and you're making your way through that primary process, which is, as everybody knows, a process that's in that is essentially supported by the real gung-ho extreme of each party. This is a long-standing fact, everybody knows it, that the people that go out and vote in primaries are the real ideologically motivated, mostly radical members of a party. So that would mean in the Democratic Party, the real progressives, in the Republican Party, the real super conservatives. That's why guys like down through the years, you've had your right-wing candidate, man, who has, you know, been everybody's model in the Republican Party or all of the conservatives' model, and then you have your really progressive. It turns out that when Ronald Reagan got elected president, I think he was about the most extremely conservative guy they had in the party that year because he was going up against George Bush and a few other guys. But I think that Ronald Reagan was the far right at that time. But at that particular time, far right didn't mean what it means today. At that particular time, far right meant cut the taxes and kick the commies, kick the crap out of the commies. Cut taxes, beat the living crap out of commies, beat up on unions. And that's it, man. Nobody said anything in those days about the religious right. Nothing.
What about abortion?
They never said a thing about abortion. Never. Ronald Reagan represented the most extremely conservative candidate, I think, that the Republican Party had that year. And there wasn't a peep out of anybody about abortion, about prayer, about this, about that, about something else. Conservatism back then was pretty much a Barry Goldwater thing, which was the following. You know, like I said, beat the hell out of commies, cut all those taxes back, don't let the unions get out of control. Tell the big federal government to stick it, you know, start anybody that's costing taxpayers a lot of money. So, and that was the message in 1980, man. That was the message. That was the message after not just 4 years of Jimmy Carter, don't worry about that, but 8 years of the Republicans, which included Richard Nixon. And Nixon was not Mr. Cut the Budget by a long shot. Because he had to deal with, you know, a Democratic Congress. And then you had all these Democrats like Johnson, Kennedy, and so forth. So along comes Ronald Reagan. And guess what happened in the 8 years that Ronald Reagan was president? Guess what happened? All of a sudden, guys started showing up at the White House. You know, it's almost like late nights a limousine would pull up. You know, and who gets out? Jerry Falwell. And
are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Ronald Reagan was friends with Jerry Falwell, with Dobson, I don't know who else, but there was suddenly a lot of guys visiting, a lot of friends, a lot of the breaking of bread with these religious leaders who were decidedly conservative. That's when it began, and that's when you had the Ralph Reeds, and that's when you had, then all of a sudden by the late 80s came all of that crazy-ass stuff, the Wichita abortion clinic stuff, and you know,
but that was Ronald Reagan, not George Bush.
That was, I think, that was Daddy Bush when he came in, and then you had Pat Buchanan, and it suddenly became the Republicans had to, you know, offer up their arch conservative guy. But not since Ronald Reagan has an arch conservative guy been elected as a Republican president. George Bush is not that, and neither was his old man. The point that I'm making here is that Santorum ain't going to get it done. I'd be talking about Democrats, but they already got their guy.
Yeah, that guy, Obama, man, he's almost on the communist end.
You're out of your mind, man. You don't know what you're talking about, communists.
Well, he's like the most progresso of them.
Progresso's a soup.
Progresso's a soup, bud. What are you talking about?
What did you say?
Progressive.
Progressive, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing that nobody ever understands. The American people, for all of our experience with democracy, I got to tell you something. People, look at Obama. Everybody is holding to their line about Obama because they don't want to be wrong. And every day that they are holding to their line about Obama, they look dumber and dumber and dumber. Obama is, you know, all you had to do was look at him walking around with that Lincoln book under his arm. You knew who his hero was. It was Abraham Lincoln, a pragmatist, one of the greatest pragmatists that this country's ever had for president. This is an Obama that held on to the Patriot Act. This is an Obama that was good to his word. He went into Pakistan. You know, remember all the heat that he took when he said, if they don't act, we will? Everybody said, ah, you don't know what you're talking about. Guess what, baby? This is an Obama that is trying to find a way to deal with the offshore drilling without pissing off all the progressives in his party. But at the same time, he sees the wisdom of at least moving that direction. But that's if you are objective and you're looking at this. But if you're one of these people that just wants to be right all the time instead of finding out what the hell's going on, then Obama's always going to be a commie. And I hate to break the news to these people that think Obama's a commie, but over on the other side, all of the people that supported Obama, now they're pissed off at him because they think he's Bush light, because they think, oh, yeah, this is now, they now consider themselves to be really, really edgy because they're criticizing Obama. And they're saying that he is going back on his word on Guantanamo, and he's going back on his word on Afghanistan, and the guy is Mr. Patriot Act, and the guy is Mr. Hardass, and the guy is Mr. This, and he just isn't the good, progressive that they... Presidents are supposed to be pragmatic. Presidents are not supposed to adhere to a political party's wish. Presidents are supposed to help the country and defend the Constitution.
Yeah, but what's the difference?
What's the difference? There's big difference. There's a big difference. Difference is what's best for the country, not what's best for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Good presidents, great presidents, become the guy that says, I'm doing what's best for this country. I don't give a damn what my party thinks. I'm president now. And this is about a country surviving. This isn't some jive-ass game we're playing now. So Obama gets in there, or Bush, or anybody else, they take a look at the inbox, and what do they see? All kinds of stuff that they never knew existed when they were out campaigning. And they got to deal with it. And they also have to deal with an American populace that is still back, mired in the Stone Age when it comes to what presidents are supposed to do.
You got to write a book. Yeah, I think you should write a book. That'd be really good, man, because you're smart about stuff.
Write a book. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a book on an Etch-A-Sketch here. That's what I was trying to get to, is this Etch-A-Sketch, and I didn't even get to the Etch-A-Sketch, which I wish you guys would remind me.
You got to do the Etch-A-Sketch.
I can't do it now. We got a break. We'll be right back. More with the Etch-A-Sketch coming up on the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Famous Bill Henry Show.
You know, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the results back from the coroner on the death of Whitney Houston. But just to make a very quick work of the Romney Etch-A-Sketch situation, it was simply that Romney's campaign manager, or one of his campaign people, said, well, when you get into the fall campaign, that is the campaign for the presidency, it's kind of like an Etch-A-Sketch. You shake it up and you start all over again. That was taken by Santorum and others to mean, oh, so you're taking your positions on different things and you're just changing them, which that's not what it meant. And only someone trying desperately to hang on to the spotlight, to hang on to some momentum, would say that. And that's Santorum. About as desperate a guy as you can get, man.
Man, you don't like that guy, do you?
What do you mean I don't like him?
You don't like Santorum on account of, because he's a Jesus freak and everything.
I didn't say that. I don't like the guy for president. I got nothing against the guy.
Guy got like 7 kids, man. You ought to have a little more pity on him. Yeah, guy's got 7 kids.
I don't give a damn if he's got 7 kids. He's got 7 kids, why don't he stay home and take care of them? How about that?
That's what a woman for.
Oh, is that what a woman's for? What a sexist.
Yeah, the ladies are going to call in on that one. I don't care.
That's what a woman's for, huh? Take care of the kids. This is one of the problems we're having with this country, man. Guys with attitudes like that. The woman. She takes care of the kids. And the guys are out deadbeating it. Forget it.
I ain't talking about being a deadbeat.
Just forget it. Okay, we got Dr. Jim Sadler. He's going to join us from San Diego here as we talk about this, the culmination, if you will, or the end of the road when it comes to the story of the passing of Whitney Houston. When I say the end of the road, it's not the end of the road of Whitney Houston's great legacy, but what exactly caused this girl's death? Dr. Jim Sadler with us. Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
What did you say?
I'm sorry. I said, Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
Yeah, because I, when I first heard you say, Dr. Sadler, how do you do? So it sounded a little as if you drooled it out.
Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Phil. Yeah, Phil, Whitney Houston, according to the coroner's report, was a chronic cocaine user. We know this from reports of friends and family. But because of the chronic cocaine use, she did have the drug in her system when she drowned in that hotel bathtub. This is according to the Los Angeles County coroner, who released the autopsy findings that also noted that heart disease contributed to her death.
Okay, now the heart disease that contributed to her death.
Just can you hold on for a minute? Because there's an awful lot I got to get through here.
But I want to ask a question.
There's an awful lot that I got to get through. So, God, where was I?
You said Whitney Houston.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Whitney Houston drowned in a bathtub, cocaine in her system, heart disease, yes, contributed to the death. Now, the disclosure, if you, Phil, there was weeks of speculation, obviously, about what killed this girl. When they found her, and I don't know if you saw any of the reports right after, she was submerged in a bathtub at the hotel. It was ruled an accidental death. There was prescription medication found in the room. The police said there was no evidence of wrongdoing. Now, the chief of operations, Craig Harvey, he said cocaine and the byproduct were found in Houston's system.
What are the byproducts?
You still talking? I'm trying to...
Look, Dr. Sadler, this isn't the Dr. Sadler hour.
I know, but I'm trying to get through this.
You gotta get through it.
Hey, bud, shut up. Go in the other room.
I didn't do anything.
Go in the other room. I'm asking questions here, Dr. Sadler. Do you mind?
God. You know, I've been listening to you tonight, Phil, and you're screaming and yelling and everything.
I know Dr. Sadler, he was yelling at me, too.
You know, I gotta tell you...
Hold on for a minute. Get out of here, Robert.
Wait a minute, I don't...
Get out of here. Now your pals are gone.
What do you mean, my pals? I'm trying to give you the results of the coroner's report.
We're doing a radio show here. That means that I ask questions and you answer. It isn't the Dr. Sadler hour, and now he's going to just start rapping about all kinds of stuff.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it works.
Yes, you do. You've been on the show before.
I've been on the show before, but when I started to tell people about a report that I would have, you let me finish.
Are you crying now? Is that what you're doing?
You let me finish.
Dr. Sadler, continue, please.
The coroner's chief of operations, Craig Harvey, said cocaine and its byproducts was found in Houston's system. The drug was listed as a contributing factor in a death. He said the results indicated Houston was a chronic cocaine user. The toxicology results also showed Houston had marijuana, Xanax, the muscle relaxant Flexeril, and the allergy medication Benadryl in her system. Houston died hours before she was scheduled to appear, as you know, at the Clive Davis party. She also had heart disease.
Now, I want to ask a question.
All right.
The heart disease that she had was not created by the cocaine use, correct?
No. This is a condition that it can be genetically... she could be predisposed, I should say, to... this kind of disease. It does run in a family's genes. It could have simply been the result of the kind of lifestyle that she lived. But you don't say, well, cocaine causes this kind of disease alone. She had blockage in her arteries. She was a 48-year-old woman. She did have a great deal of stress in her life. I don't know if she was a cigarette smoker or not. I suspect she was not as a singer. But you have to understand, this is a woman approaching middle age with a great deal of stress. Her diet probably was not the best. She looked like she was in relatively good shape, other than the fact that the night she died, she was, she looked out that she was had been drinking. And
well, she was dancing and sweating.
Right. And so, and what is that? That's music. See, you interrupted me.
That's right. It's the music, and we're going to a break. Has he got a problem with that?
Yeah, I got a problem with that, because now I look like a horse's ass.
No, you don't look like a horse's ass. I can finish this up on the other side.
You're going to finish it up. You're not even a dog.
Get him out of here, the sniveling. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry. What is with that guy? World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're yelling at everybody.
Tough.
All I wanted to do was finish.
Well, you don't get to.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here in our News and Information Hour, and I'm trying to find some kind of good news here. I mean, it's all just slop, man. It's all the same bad stuff. This cat in Afghanistan, this guy, this Bales, he's been charged with, I believe it's 17 counts of murder. And, you know, they ought to hang him out to dry. I don't see any reason to have any compassion for that scum. And I'll tell you one other thing, man, and I don't, you know, maybe I said it before and I'll say it again. I don't know how these guys, and I may be the dumbest guy in the room when I say this, but hey, how is it that we have men in the Army like that psychiatrist at Fort Hood or this guy or anybody in the United States Army? I don't give a good, sweet damn what they do. How is it that we have these people and they're allowed to speak out against the government? They're allowed to speak out against military policy. They're allowed to campaign against certain. I don't understand that. I get it about free speech, okay? But if you are part of an organization or some entity that has an express purpose that will be harmed by your actions, whatever they may be, then they either fire your ass or they tell you to cease and desist with the activities that you're involved in. And if you're a member of the Army, why is the Army exempt? I mean, we already know, because we've seen it time and time again, that while the Army has some of the bravest men and women in the history of this country who've gone to war and who have acquitted themselves with heroism, the likes of which we will rarely see in our lives, we also know that the Army has had criminality and behavior that is, you can't even imagine it would come out of someone serving in the United States military. All kinds of criminality, all kinds of unseemly behavior, all kinds of activity and speech and attitude. These cats during the Iraq War is a good example of these guys. I get it. If you want to be a conscientious objector, I get that. I understand. If you're against war, that is your right. But no. Not after you join.
Yeah, that's the stupidest thing. There's guys, I think I'll be in the Army. Oh, you know what? I changed my mind.
Yeah. No. You don't get to do that. You know, I'm going to join the Army, and somebody was telling me this the other day. I don't know who the hell, but one of my friends said, well, you know, these kids, they join the Army because we are in this mindset now that even though the draft is long gone in American history, we still want to see people in the military as stupid individuals who were suckered into it. I mean, how much respect do we have for these kids anyway? It's the Cindy Sheehan's syndrome. Oh, my poor kid. He's a poor, manipulated kid. He volunteered, didn't he? Yeah, but, you know, he's kind of dumb. And this other dumbass, and this dumbass, and this dumbass. I should feel sorry for all of these guys, because all of a sudden, it occurred to them that they're wearing a U.S. Army uniform, and that means sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, you pick up a gun and you fire it at a guy in a different uniform. And how could they possibly know that that was going to happen? Yeah, you're right. What a con job, huh?
Yeah, man, it's like you join the Army, man. They wear a helmet and drive around in tanks. It ain't like they're out selling Girl Scout cookies.
Got that right.
Next time I see a Girl Scout in a tank, I'll let her know.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever, man.
You're not that funny.
All right, take it easy, okay, with you guys with the trying to top each other. So, what's the story here, man? Somebody give me an answer on this one, you know?
I don't know, man. I'm just saying that's your constitutional right.
Constitutional right? It's the United States Army. What do you mean constitutional right? Next thing you have a constitutional right, you want to get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning. You want to sleep until 7. And this freaking, this Fort Hood psychiatrist, this guy, I can't in my wildest dreams, in my wildest hallucinations, in the words of my main man, Clint Eastwood, in my wildest and craziest hallucinations, I could never have fathomed a guy in the U.S. Army like that fruitcake. A guy that is in contact with terrorists. A guy that is actively, vocally campaigning against military policy. A guy that is talking and counseling young soldiers against orders that they may have, or directives, or Army doctrine. A guy that is allowed to do that. Allowed to. What the hell kind of an army is that?
I don't know, man. I think they're just allowed to do it.
Well, maybe somebody ought to say that they're not allowed to do it anymore. I don't care if it's an army, when you talk about the army of any country, it is the, if you will, the militia of the people. It's the big militia. It's the big one, baby. The standing army. When we talk about raising a standing army, we say, we need the citizen now to take arms. We need, all good men to come to the aid of their country and women to take up arms. And we make that a service that is possible for everybody. You have to be in pretty bad physical shape, psychological shape. There have to be a great many extenuating circumstances not to qualify you to serve your country in the United States Army. And I'm sure it's the same in most militaries. Now, the Marine Corps is a different story. The Navy, that's a whole other ball game. The Air Force, but the Army is the Army. And that's where everybody can go to serve their country in the military if they so desire. Like I said, if you qualify, and you've got to be pretty jacked up not to qualify.
But you got like one leg you can get in.
No, you ain't going to get it with one leg, you idiot.
Well, I don't know.
They're not going to take you with one leg, bud. No. But the point is, it is our... So, I get that. I understand that. But it's a volunteer force. It's a volunteer force. Now, maybe what they're saying is we would not have the success recruiting soldiers that we have if we had all of these rules and regulations on speech and attitude. And I don't understand that at all, man. Are you trying to tell me that you're gonna see recruitment drop to nothing if you keep some jackball from talking crap about the U.S. government, talking crap about the military, being in touch with cats overseas who are fomenting terror? Oh, well, you know why we dropped to zero in recruiting this month, Bob? Because we wouldn't let these kids talk to Nazis. Well, I don't get that one. You know.
Maybe I was going to need a Marine.
I don't know. You know, the way that warfare is evolving, and this is the truth, the way that warfare, the way that combat, the weapons of war are evolving to that point where units are smaller, even the weapons themselves are smaller, but the destructive potential is much, much greater. So a soldier, one soldier, is able to do more. He can kill more and destroy more than ever before. A smaller unit can do more than larger units might have done in past wars. And the weapons that have been developed, the body armor, for instance, remote robotics. We all know about the drones. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There are weapons, remote robotic weapons now that are used that are on land, on wheels or tracks that are remote controlled, that have all kinds of automatic weapon, all kinds of automatic firepower, launch grenades. And these are things that a soldier controls from afar. The whole idea, of course, is not to expend lives. And so we are relying more and more on the technology and the robotics.
Yeah, you get the point, though, man. All that stuff's going to break down.
Well, you're making a good point. If you rely too much on technology and the technology fails you, you're in a world of hurt, man, because you may not have the warm bodies that you need.
That'd be going to get the draft back on.
Well, it'll have to be a different America than the America that we're living in today. The draft is never going to work. Not today, not in 10 years, not in 20 years. The draft is done in America for the foreseeable future. If we ever have to bring the draft back, it'll be in a time and a place where everyone listening to my voice right now, and I mean everyone, will be long gone.
Are you kidding? I mean, that's a long time away.
You better believe it's a long time away. The only thing that'll bring the draft back in America is if we have a devastating war that almost wipes the country out, and people wake up and somehow decide, geez, I guess we're going to have to get some soldiers going here because the country almost, you know, we almost lost it. But I don't see that. I don't know. I just, you know.
What's that book you're reading?
The book I'm reading, George Friedman's book, and I recommend it to everybody, The Next 100 Years, is a fantastic book. George Friedman is the founder of Stratfor, and I follow Stratfor at Twitter. And you can subscribe to Stratfor. It's an intelligence gathering organization like Debka, which is the Israeli version of Stratfor. And they were hacked, as you know, back in December. And Anonymous, they probably picked the wrong people to hack, because when they hacked Stratfor, they hacked a company that their specialty is intelligence. And it wasn't that they hacked them back in December. I think they hacked them before that. And shortly thereafter, they caught the guys that did it. But George Friedman's the founder of this organization, this company, and he's written a book called The Next 100 Years. It's a great read, man. It's not a bunch of sci-fi. It's not a bunch of jive-ass prognostication. It's sort of futurism based upon the logical reading of news and events. He draws this final conclusion. It's not a final conclusion, but he draws this conclusion. Now, you will not find anybody, that will draw a similar conclusion. George Friedman says that the next 100 years will pretty much continue to be dominated by the United States, that Russia and China specifically will be in decline by the middle part of the century, if not sooner. And that our major competitor by the end of this century, by the end of the 21st century, the major power will be on our continent, and it'll be...
Canada.
Nope.
Mexico?
Mexico.
Ha ha ha, yeah, right.
Go ahead and laugh, bud. But Mexico is paying some serious dues. And Mexico, like America, is geographically protected, and Mexico has the benefit of having the big brother to the north, learning as they go, as if you will, kind of on the job training. And they, like I said, they're paying some serious freaking dues. They've got a lot of natural resources. They've got a really creative and energetic population. They've screwed up bad, but they're going to come through this, according to Friedman. They're going to come through it, and they're going to become a big-time competitor with the United States. So we can only wait and see. All right, we'll be back here with our final segment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here in our News and Information Hour. The Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com.
You're really intelligent, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, right. Sticky Cheese.
Who is that guy anyway, bud?
I don't know, but the guy, he talks like he's from England.
No, man, he talks like an Australian.
No, I'll tell you what that accent is. It's a South African accent. That dude on the Stone Dine...
Yeah, the Stone Dine cookware. The guy's all going, you're nothing stickier than Sticky Cheese.
Yeah, it's Stone Dine. That cat, every time that commercial comes on, I get so hungry because he's cooking steaks.
Yeah, man, he like cooking up an egg and bacon.
Yeah, but you get that sticky cheese.
Yeah, I got your sticky cheese. Hackers block Mexico Pope visit sites. Well, that's some big game there, Anonymous. The hacker group Anonymous in Mexico crashed at least two of the websites for Pope Benedict's upcoming visit to Mexico on Thursday, claiming the papal visit is a political move to support the conservative National Action Party. Yeah, sure. Samuel, and that'll really stop the National Action Party now, won't it? Samuel Najera, spokesman for the Mexican Episcopal Conference, said its webpage on the papal visit was blocked by a cyber attack. We've been aware of the threat that's been making the rounds on social networks that was brought to fruition today. This is part of a dynamic these days of a lack of safety and acts of intolerance towards certain groups. For the moment, this does damage to the logistics of the papal visit. The site contained information on the Pope's planned activity starting Friday in the north central state of
Guantanamera? Yeah.
No, it ain't. It's Guan. What do you mean Guantanamera? That's a song.
I thought that was what it is.
No, it isn't. It's Guana Bat Guano. Get out of Bat Guano. Guana Yujado or some jazz. I don't know what it is. Guantanamera. The anonymous Ibero-America website, which has been a channel of communication for such hacker ops in the past, said the site crashes were the result of anonymous operations with names such as Pharisee, Blah Blah, Freeloader, and so on. Anonymous Mexico said in a video posted on social media sites that the Pope's visit will cost Mexicans money that could be better spent on the poor and is meant to support the National Action Party in the July 1st presidential election. The candidate, Jose, whatever the hell, the candidate for the PAN party, the National Action Party, is trailing frontrunner Enrique Peña Nieto of the Institutional Revolutionary Party. Wait a minute. Which one are they supporting? For the Conservative National Action Party, Institutional Revolutionary Party. I don't know, man. I always thought that the Institutional Revolutionary Party was the old line party. The official campaign sessions start at the end of this month. The thing that's funny to me is Anonymous pretending like they're that they have a political agenda. I mean, they don't really. They what they want to do is just screw stuff up because they have the technology to screw stuff up, and then they think up the political reasons later.
No, they don't. I mean, thinking about this now.
Yeah, but if they thought this is not going to change anything, this is not going to change the people supporting one party or the other. You know, one of the things that they obviously don't understand, Anonymous in Mexico, and I don't even know if there is really such a thing as Anonymous Mexico. It seems to me like Anonymous is run mostly from, the United States, Europe, places like that, because the Mexican people are Catholic people. They're devoutly Catholic people. It's their thing. It's what they do on Sunday. They like it. The Pope, they dig, you know? So if Anonymous is trying to get the friendship of the Mexican people or get them to support whatever it is Anonymous thinks they're doing, and I don't think they know what it is they're doing. I think they just, like I said, we said this during the pre-show, the technology has outpaced people's ability to think in a critical way. The technology has outpaced our ability to be creative. The technology, frankly, has outpaced our intelligence, our ability to grasp more complex issues than just how to play chess. You know, what is the best way for our world to unfold? What's the best government? What's the best political philosophy? These are all things that take a little bit of sitting down and thinking about. There's no computer that's going to help you do that. There's no nothing that's going to help you do that. It's your own experience in life and your own belief system. And Anonymous is typical of a lot of people these days. Lots and lots of technology, lots and lots of ways to deliver things, lots and lots of dishes and Wi-Fi and all of that, and nothing to say. They ain't got anything to say. And if they really had spent any time analyzing the problem, whatever it is they think the problem is, they'd realize that attacking the Pope and the Catholic Church attacks the peasant people of Mexico. That's what it is. You're attacking, you know, the peasants of Mexico. They ain't got a whole, and when I say peasant, I mean peasant. I mean folks that are living off the land, you know, people that are really, really the salt of the earth, more so than anybody you ever met in America. And that's not a diss on America. I'm just talking about how really bare to the bone people live in Mexico. So these are people that go, wow, the Pope's coming. You know, it's a little change of pace. It's something that they dig. They get to see the Holy Father. They get to go to a really cool looking festivals, and there's food, and there's this big church, and it's cool for them. And what does Anonymous do? Because they're so stupid, they go and they try to screw it all up, and they say they're doing it in the name of the Mexican people. You guys ought to get a grip. But that's what happens when your ability to sit down at a computer and mess stuff up goes beyond your ability to think critically about these things. I maintain that Anonymous is nothing more than a highly evolved clubhouse in a tree. Girls not allowed. Throwing water balloons from a car. You know, peeing your name on somebody's lawn. That's Anonymous. Only they have all of this technology. They have all of these computers. They have all of this internet. They can do so much more. But really all they're doing is a high-tech version of throwing a water balloon at somebody in a car. All right.
That's pretty intelligent, Mr. Henry.
Thank you very much. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. And, of course, we're online at philhenryshow.com for all of your Phil Henry Show needs. Don't forget, we'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same station, same everything, baby, for another version of the Phil Henry Show. And sign up for a backstage pass and get a look at our live streaming video of the show as well as our video and audio archives. Till tonight, peace out. We love you. Bud, take it away.
The Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan
Northcraft. Never mind.
Never mind.
Phil Henry.